Green Sense Radio is brought to you by Green Sense Farms. We're changing the world with sustainable indoor vertical farming, growing more with less. Our leafy greens are sold live so they burst with flavor. Visit greensensefarms.com and watch us grow.
Welcome to Green Sense, a weekly look at the people, policies, and innovations that are changing our world. Here's Robert Colangelo.
Welcome. You've tuned into the show that informs and inspires you about sustainable innovations that make economic sense. Bob Kessler is our executive producer, and he's going to tell us more about today's guests.
Yes, and you know, renewable energy does make a lot of economic sense. It's cheaper, pollutes less, obviously. So why are the American people paying to the tune of billions of dollars paying for coal-fired power plants? We'll get the full story from the Union of Concerned Scientists. And the very inspiring story of Archie's Acres, which is helping U.S. veterans transition back into society by teaching them to be organic farmers.
Both stories are very interesting, and they're all coming up on this edition of Green Sense. The idea of soldiers turning their swords into plowshares goes back to the book of Isaiah in the Bible, but it's being lived out in new ways today as U.S. veterans transition back into society from battle. Karen Archiplay, co-founder of Archie's Acres, which trains military vets to become organic farmers, joins us now all the way from Escondido, California. Karen, welcome to Green Sense.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
You're going to have to tell us your story on how you worked in the fashion industry and what inspired you to launch Archie's Acres.
Okay, well, I was a hat maker for many years, and I always say I prayed to God to be a millionaire. God misunderstood, and there I was, a milliner, and we're still working out the list. But my husband actually had joined the Marine Corps, and so he was part of 3-1 Lima, and when he came back from his third tour in Iraq, he was part of the invasion, the Battle of Fallujah, and his third tour was Haditha, just as that became a hot spot. And we built our first greenhouse during that time. And at the completion of that, we realized that we could match his income as a 3-1 infantry, squad leader. Thank you. 3-1 squad leader. And we just basically created our program. So he almost re-enlisted because so many of the people he'd served with were re-enlisting because they couldn't find employment.
So making the transition from fashion to farming, was that happened over a short period of time? Was it abrupt? Was it a long transition? Talk a little bit about that.
I'm going to say it was abrupt. We moved from Los Angeles to Escondido, which is North County, San Diego. And my husband was in the military at the time. I was here working the farm, getting things set up until he came home in the following April of 2006. And so basically farming took over. I went into real estate for a short while. I was a loan officer, queen of the 30-year fix. And as that bubble burst, we actually were in full-fledged farming and training.
What inspired you to go beyond farmers producing vegetables to farmers producing additional farmers? Because you're really training the farmers, not just producing the vegetables.
That's correct. We grow farmers here. The way that happened is my husband almost re-enlisted, and that was not okay with me. So we made an agreement that if we could work with the people he had served with in agriculture, which he did not believe the military would embrace, that he would agree to stay here and work on a farm. And so we created the Veteran Sustainable Agriculture Training Program, which is now known as Archie's Institute for Sustainable Agriculture, in partnership with Cal Poly Pomona.
That's really great. And what is it about farming that's therapeutic for veterans?
Well, you know, interesting, this is not a new idea. After World War II, that's how the Bureau of Land Management came up with that idea to match our war weary with farming agricultural land. And the whole thing is that agriculture doesn't care how you feel or what you've been through. As long as you feed the plants, they'll feed you and the community around you. And it is naturally therapeutic. There's neurotransmitters in your fingers. And when you're working with the plants and the soil or the, in our case, hydro organic, you know, it's naturally therapeutic. You're making things grow.
That's pretty poignant, what you've just mentioned. And what do you find unique or so inspiring about working with the U.S. military veterans?
Well, people like my husband, I will tell you, they serve our country. They're proud. They're really they're mission driven. And so being able to give them the mission of reinvigorating the family organic farm throughout America, it's something that has been embraced. And we are so proud of our alumni, and we're proud to get to be part of that.
My guest is Karen Archiplay, co-founder of Archie's Acres, who trains soldiers to be farmers. Well, Karen, I'm an indoor vertical farmer, and our show here is all about the economics of sustainability. Not all green is good. It's got to make economic sense. And you've
right.
put together a 30-minute documentary about Archie's Acres. The students who are learning to be farmers are told of the great risks involved in running their own farms. And I know firsthand, farming's not simple, especially when you're trying new ideas. Talk a little bit about the movie and the risks involved with being a farmer.
Thank you. Well, the movie was actually made by Tribeca, who hired Efren Film to produce it. And it is, like you said, 30-minute documentary, and it just follows a few students through our class and to see where they go on to after the class. And for us, we were really honored that they did that, because the reality is farming is a challenge. And there are times, and I always say, you know, my husband was a combat vet. And so when he came back out of fierce battle, it could be very boring, very quick. Well, let me tell you, farming's not boring. Self-employment is not boring. Because you think, we're not going to make it, and then, oh, we made it. So that happens too often. But for us, our relationship with our alumni begins on the day they graduate, because that's when they need us. They need us the day the rubber hits the road.
So do you have a success story that you could share that shows how a farmer student overcame the risks of being a startup farmer and became successful?
Oh, we have so many. We have so many.
Give me your favorite
one. We have Jason Smith. Jason Smith is in Alaska, and he took an area that only flew in food, and he took over an old factory building and literally is feeding his community now. And now I've heard there's two or three other hydro-organic farmers doing the same thing in that area. And all I can say is, bravo. That's awesome. We have Mango Mike in Japan, and he's growing mangoes in a greenhouse because of their weather. And I know he's been riding out the storm, and it's awful. But the fortitude and that total stick with it is just awesome. It makes me proud. Endeavor Shen is in Encinitas right here in San Diego, and he's growing both orchids, and then he also does some lettuce plants with hydro-organic, and I'm really proud of him as well.
As you mentioned, that there's a lot of risks in the economics of farming. What kind of tools do you give your students that help them overcome these risks?
We make sure they understand the numbers first, that they understand what something costs and what you'll be able to gain from it, because you have to be smart in deciding what it is that you're going to grow. And then also making sure that they know what the compliance laws are and what the insurance, you know, that they're going to need. And for us, when they get started, then we can also help them with marketing. We can help bring attention to their farm and have them spotlighted like in that movie, being able to bring a media opportunity to them so their community can support them.
Maybe you could share with us your plans for Archie's Acres in the long term.
Sure. So Archie's Acres, we've just built a 28,000 square foot greenhouse. The whole idea of this greenhouse was to prove out a model that can go throughout the nation of building 1 acre greenhouses where one of our alumni can actually run it for 5 years. And at the end of their fourth year, they can refinance through the Farm Service Agency the cost of the build. So in that fifth year, they actually own that greenhouse themselves. They don't have to, but they have the opportunity to. And our whole thing is to help them get their sea legs, make sure they have good buyers, make sure they're following good practices, and allowing them to use Archie's Acres name as a known name for quality. And at the end of that 5 years, if they change the name, that's okay with us too.
Karen, we appreciate you being on Green Sense, and we commend you on your efforts,
you.
Both for being a farmer and teaching soldiers how to be farmers.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate that.
That's Karen Archplay, co-founder of Archie's Acres. We have provided a link to the very inspiring 30-minute documentary about their program on this week's show notes. Subscribe to our podcast at greensensefarms.com.
This is Bob Kessler, executive producer of Green Sense Radio. Every week, we cover environmental issues and meet passionate people and sustainable innovators. You might have noticed we do it with very few commercials. Our advertisers, they're just part of what supports Green Sense. We need the help of our listeners, also passionate people who care about the planet and know the value of independent media, which matters now more than ever. We've just launched our fundraising drive so you can help us continue to bring you informative and inspiring shows. Your contributions will cover our small production staff, which seeks out and schedules interviews, edits them, and puts together Green Sense every week. Plus, there's the cost of online hosting and studio equipment. So when you visit greensensefarms.com, click on Radio Show to make a contribution via Podbean. It takes just a few minutes, and as we often say on the program, individual actions multiplied by millions can yield big results. So if you're inspired by our positive and informative shows, we're asking you to help keep Green Sense going. Visit greensensefarms.com and click Radio Show to contribute to our fundraising drive via Podbean. On behalf of all of us at Green Sense Radio, thank you. Green Sense Radio is brought to you by Green Sense Farms. We're changing the world with our sustainable indoor vertical farming, growing more with less. Our leafy greens are sold live, so they burst with flavor. Visit greensensefarms.com and watch us grow. Thank you.
In an era where new developments in solar, wind, and other renewable energy sources need to be the focus, American consumers are spending $1 billion a year to bail out coal-fired power plants. Not only is the coal-fired power damaging to the environment, but it's more expensive. Several utilities continue to sell power from their coal-fired plants instead of using renewable energy sources, which could be cheaper on the grid. This is all according to a new study by the Union of Concerned Scientists, and we're joined by senior energy analyst Joe Daniel. Joe, welcome to Green Sense.
Thanks for having me.
Joe, tell us in simple terms, what's the main reasons or the reasons behind us subsidizing coal-fired power plants in a time when renewable energy should be what's driving the development of electricity?
Well, it has a lot to do with sort of the entrenched utility model and the way utilities, certain types of utilities, recover costs for the resources that they own.
And how do they recover costs?
So for a lot of utilities, the ones that we're most familiar, the ones that send us, send people like you and me a bill every month, their rates are set by a state utility regulator. And those rates are based off of expected costs to serve the customer. And if they own generating assets, if they own these coal-fired power plants, the cost to run those coal-fired power plants are sort of baked into that equation. And so they're able to run those power plants, even though there are cheaper and usually cleaner resources available on the market during that time to provide lower cost, cleaner energy to their customers. They're choosing not to buy those energy resources and run the coal-fired power plant instead.
I had the privilege a couple months ago of touring a coal-fired power plant, and what was most amazing to me was the scale of the operation and how long it takes to make change. To give you an example, they took a rail car filled with coal and physically had machinery that would dump it upside down onto a conveyor that would feed into the power plant. And they needed to have a 30-day supply in case something broke. So when you look at an industry that's so massive and it's takes so long to change things, you can see why some of these decisions can take a long time. Any thoughts or anything you'd like to embellish upon that?
Oh, absolutely. And there's a lot of inertia in the industry in general. But you see that what I found, you know, kind of surprising was that coal-fired power plants that were owned by a merchant utility, a utility that doesn't have customers that it directly sends a bill, a company that, companies that are entirely reliant on the open competitive wholesale market, which are these markets that try to, you know, set energy prices and make sure that the lowest cost resources are operating. The power plants that are reliant on those markets for their revenues operate just fine. They operate exactly the way you'd expect them to. And it's important to note that my analysis didn't look at just individual hours as if the power plant could just turn on and turn off. It looked at long periods of time where these power plants could have turned off for, say, the winter when prices were low and wind generation is high, and bought energy off the market. And the example that I'd like to give is, there's some power plants in Texas that have begun doing this. They turn off for 8 months of the year when prices are low, and they know that prices are going to be too low for them to make money, and they turn on in the summertime when prices come back up. And that's a much more rational way to operate a power plant if you're more expensive than the market.
Do the utilities or the coal industry provide any justification for these kinds of systems that are in place and for changing them?
It kind of depends on which utility you're talking to. I've talked with utilities that claim that these power plants are needed for reliability, which, you know, might be true in some months, like in the summer months that I was talking about when prices are high. But, you know, I don't find that a particularly convincing argument when, you know, the market, if the market price is below the price that the cost you to generate, that means there's some other resource available that can generate for less money. You know, there's other more nuanced excuses, but, you know, I've been talking about this issue for a number of years. I've talked with a lot of utilities, a lot of grid operators, and I haven't found an excuse that excuses this behavior for all of the power plants. There are some individual exceptions that make sense, but for the most part, this is a behavior that utilities are empowered to stop doing. They choose to do this. They can choose not to do it.
My guest is Joe Daniel, Senior Energy Analyst with the Union of Concerned Scientists, and we're talking about energy production and pricing and the ability to use renewable energy and cheaper sources versus higher costs. Do we as citizens and consumers have a choice in the matter, or is just this is how it is when you're dealing with a regulated utility?
Well, you know, again, it depends on where you live. In a state like Texas, customers have retail choice. Interestingly enough, in Texas, we found very few coal plants for doing this. But that doesn't necessarily mean that alone will prevent this problem from happening. Customers...
When you have choice... Do you find lower rates?
That's not really what my analysis was focused on. Really what I was focused on was seeing which coal-fired power plants were really engaging in this. And the reason that I wanted to do this was so that I could work with consumer advocates and other environmental groups and go to the utility commissions that are responsible for overseeing these regulated utilities and show them what's going on, because this is data that isn't freely accessible. I mean, it's all publicly available, but it's hourly and sometimes in some cases sub-hourly data that has to get all batched up to show how these power plants are operating in a way that's depriving customers of lower cost, cleaner energy.
So, Joe, what do you think about a free market? Can we have a free electric energy market that is not regulated? And will that improve the situation or worsen it?
Well, I mean, there is this idea of deregulation, but I've never particularly liked that term. Not because I'm, for big government regulation, but because the EPA regulates every power plant in the country. There's going to be state, local, regional, federal regulations for these power plants, no matter if they're in a traditional market or a restructured market. The question is not about regulation. It's about getting the markets to behave the way they're supposed to when you have the market. They're supposed to operate so that the lowest cost resources operate the most often, and the high-cost resources operate the least often. But if utilities are able to subvert that process, then you have a real problem, and we're not going to get the electric grid that we all deserve and that we all want.
How much do the coal companies have a say on this and impact the use of coal and pricing?
By coal companies, you mean the companies that own the mines and
that sell the coal to the utilities? Yes.
Yeah. I don't know. I didn't look too much into that. There are some examples of coal plants that are located right next to coal mines, and they have cost savings from that, but they also have other impediments, because they can't get coal from anywhere else. And so that affects the price of their fuel. But at the end of the day, this is about utilities making a conscious decision to ignore the price signals of the market and operate the way they always have, instead of providing lower costs and cleaner energy to customers, which is what most customers want.
Is there a silver bullet here, Joe, or do you have a simple solution, or is this a complex issue that has is multifaceted?
Well, in some ways, yes. The utilities could just stop doing this. That is the most straightforward way to stop this. They have total authority to allow the market to pick the lowest cost resources to reliably meet energy needs. If they don't do that, then regulators have the oversight authority to create better incentives or disincentives to help encourage the utilities to stop doing this. And if neither of those things happen, then groups like Union of Concerned Scientists and advocates and allies will go into utility proceedings and make our case that the utilities should stop that.
That's senior energy analyst Joe Daniel with the Union of Concerned Scientists telling us about the coal industry bailout that no one's talking about. I'm Robert Colangelo, and this is Green Sense. You can subscribe to our podcast at greensensefarms.com. We hope you enjoyed this edition of Green Sense. Visit greensensefarms.com to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, and you can check out the list of radio stations that air our show. All you have to do is stay fresh, keep innovating, because when you're green, you grow.
Green Sense Radio is brought to you by Green Sense Farms. We're changing the world with sustainable indoor vertical farming, growing more with less. Our leafy greens are sold live so they burst with flavor. Visit greensensefarms.com and watch us grow.
Green Sense is recorded in the Duneland ecosystem on the eastern shores of Lake Michigan. The program is copyright Green Sense Farms, all rights reserved.